Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Our conversations always include you, and if you'd like to join us this evening, and we hope you will, our number is 941-3689. That's if you're calling us from Oahu. And from the neighbor islands, it's toll-free at 1-877-941-3689. Since the advent of charter schools in Hawaii about almost a decade ago, many considered them to be Hawaii's best hope for educational reform. While they are public schools, charter schools continue to struggle to survive. They are state-funded, but are not funded at the same per-student allocation as other public schools, roughly $6,000 for charter school students, compared to an average of between $9,000 and $12,000 for those who are in DOE schools. This issue really circles around the idea of sustainability, including for facilities, which charter schools must pay for on their own. Some facts to remember about charter schools. They serve over 6,000 students from K through 12. The charter schools employ more than 500 public employees. They are paid for with tax dollars. They're open to all who want to attend them, and they are subject to state and federal performance standards. Tonight, we're going to take a look at where charter schools are at this moment in time, and again, look at how they will hopefully survive in the future and what is being done to reallocate funds at a higher level to be able to take care of both children's needs in the classroom and facilities for them to be in as they are being taught. Joining me in the studio is Alvin Parker. He is a former teacher at Waianae High School. He is now a principal of Kawaihona School in Waianae. Did I get that right? And he's also the chairman of the Charter School Review Panel and a member of the Board of Directors for the Hawaii Teacher Standard Board. By phone, joining us from Hilo is John Thatcher. He was a DOE elementary school teacher at schools on Oahu and also on Hawaii Island from 1978 through 2002. He's currently the principal of Connections Public Charter Schools in Hilo. It began as a school within a school in 1995, then 5 years later converted to become the first startup charter school in the state. Also joining us by phone is Lynn Fallon. She is the inaugural executive director of the Ho'okako'o Corporation, which is a nonprofit established in 2002 at the first implementing action of Act 2. She has a wide variety of experience with children and teaching. She was a special assistant of children and youth under Governor Ben Cayetano. She's also an Annie E. Casey Fellow, and we're very glad to have all of you join us tonight. Thank you for being here, Alvin.
Thank you.
And we have John and Lynn on the phone.
Aloha.
Aloha. Just wanted to make sure you're all there.
Yep. Aloha from Hilo.
Oh, good. Now we know that we have a full table. However, we are ephemerally going to gather this evening. You know, charter schools were looked at as being Hawaii's best hope for being able to offer a really quality education that would center around meeting the needs of each school's constituency. And we've been looking at this over time. As we're looking at it at this point in time, from your perspective, John, given the fact that you've been involved with this for such a long time and your school's history, what do you think of where we are now versus where we were a few years ago?
Okay, maybe just to get us started on the right foot, I'd like to do a little correction on the numbers that you used in the beginning. This year, the charter schools are getting about $8,000 per pupil. Not 6,000. The numbers are kind of hard to understand sometimes because you get so many different figures.
Well, I got those from Senator Sakamoto.
Oh, did you?
Okay. I did,
well,
yesterday, as a matter of fact.
I was talking to him yesterday.
Me too.
I promised him I would try to use the right figures because we've had a couple of conversations about this.
Well, there you go. You must have come in the door after I left. In any case,
yeah,
so it's nice to hear the numbers are better.
This year, and, you know, depending on which figures you use for the Department of Education, if I use the figures that they have submitted to the legislature, in 2005-2006, they were expending about $10,000 per pupil. So this year, people are saying it's closer to about $12,000 per pupil. So, you know, it's still a discrepancy in some areas. But I'm very hopeful because there's a number of things that are happening now that are giving us a lot of hope. The funding has been coming up over the years, and we are at a level now that Senator Sakamoto would say is pretty much equity. I think it's more fine-tuning right now to get us to the point where it's equitable across the board. So federal funding, all of the other areas that contribute to the school, I think that we're getting close to being at a level that is the same level as the Department of Education.
But the real difference, though, is that the budget that you get, the charter schools get per student, also has to include what is expended for facilities. And that's led several schools to have to go and find private money, take loans, and do things that other public schools don't have to do.
That's the big difference. And the other one is that we have to pay the full cost of our employees. So at most schools, at the DOE schools, the cost of a teacher is not really a factor that can affect the money that the school has to spend on the kids.
So how do you handle that? You've been doing this now for quite a while.
Well, it's really about business. So I went to a school in Arizona to get my credential to be a principal, and half of my education was just to be up to speed on business. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, most of the charter schools, the ones that are successful, you know, the ones that are doing well financially, it's because they have someone that is really a good business person that's able to really stay on top of it and make the wise business decisions.
So you have to be an entrepreneur, a CEO or COO of your school, as well as a good principal?
That's some of the jobs, a custodian too sometimes.
Well, it comes with the territory, but, you know, those are very specialized skills, and you went back to be able to pick up that business end of it. For a lot of the charter schools, do you see the same kind of skills in those principals as well?
The ones that are lasting through the years have really, you know, pretty much had to have those skills. And I think Alvin and Lynn can both address that issue, too.
Well, that seems to be a good point to ask you that question, Alvin Parker, because you've gotten so much to do in the time that you have created your school.
Mm-hmm.
And some would say you're lucky because you had a school that you were able to take over the facilities part of it and then creating a new charter school.
That's correct. John touches on an important point. It is a demanding job in the sense that you have to be able to manage your monies properly. We have been very fortunate to develop relationships, because it's basically about relationship building, to acquire the old Nani Kapuna school site in Nanakuli. That parcel of land is controlled by the Department of Hawaiian Homelands. And so because the most Hawaiians in the world live on the Waianae Coast, 67.7%, they felt compelled to turn it over to our school. Even though we're not a Hawaiian immersion school, we do have a component of Hawaiian education. This was an important asset for us. Mike Akane was very supportive of that, the chairman of DHHL, along with Senator Hanabusa. So these are the people that contributed to the success of our school's transition. So we've grown from 58 children to 500 children. We're the largest of the startup schools.
And on the flip side of that, a different model, Lynn Fallon, you specialize in conversion of schools.
Yes, we do. Through the legislation that you described earlier, Act 2, a nonprofit Hawaii-based corporation can partner with an existing DOE school to become a conversion charter school.
And what's the difference so people clearly understand what happens when a school converts?
When a school converts, what happens is it does continue as a public school, but it has its own local school board and is governed, and policies are set by that local school board. So it is outside of the DOE and works as a local independent public community school. We have three schools that have chosen to become conversion charter schools under Act 2. In the state, there are five, Lanakai, Wailai, and the three under Ho'okako'o. And those three are in communities of significant socioeconomic need, the poorer communities. and also with, you know, a population of children that tend to have different kinds of challenges. And so what we're looking at is we have a school on Molokai, Kualapu Elementary, one on the Big Island, which is Waimea Middle School in Kamuela, and then our newest school is on the Leeward Coast, Kamaili School, and its population, it has about 700 students, and of the 700, about 30-35% are either homeless or whose families are houseless. So if you look at the three schools, our reach is 1,500 students, about 256 employees, and in statewide reach. This model affords parents a choice in a public school system utilizing an existing public school. And it's a real exciting opportunity. The mandate of the Act 2 enables the school to receive from the nonprofit a $1 to $4 match for every four state dollars.
And Lynn, as you're talking about conversion and choice for parents too, I got to ask you how this plays into No Child Left Behind.
Well, under the No Child Left Behind law, federal law, the state, you know, has to abide by all of the performance expectations, and each state can choose various options. So, one of the options that the state of Hawaii has chosen, as part of meeting No Child Left Behind, if a single school is unable to meet the performance expectations, is to become a conversion charter school.
And that's certainly an option, though, that we don't hear very much about.
No, you know, it's been really interesting. When we first organized with, you know, Kamehameha Schools was very interested in reaching out statewide to serve more needy Hawaiian children and worked with the state legislature to see what strategies might be put in place. And as that rolled out, I think we were formed as a nonprofit as the first implementing action of Act 2 and reached out to about 20 schools statewide, you know, that were in needy communities. And out of the over 20, just three chose to convert, even with the financial incentive. And so we're hoping that in the future, whether under Act 2 or as a single conversion charter school like Wailai or Lanikai, that more schools do choose to convert.
What about the caps on new startups as well as conversions of schools?
Well, the cap for the conversions is 25, and, you know, there are only five, so there's a lot of room for growth.
But the startups is where I think there's more of a push, because
yes.
Last year there was a move to raise the cap for startups, and that failed.
Yes, it did.
So with all
there is a little bit of allowance in the law, because what the law says is that for every school that every charter school that receives accreditation, that another startup can be formed.
All right. For those of you listening, we are talking about charter schools. Certainly the Republicans are saying they want to put more support behind charter schools. We heard Lynn Finnegan say that yesterday, Representative Lynn Finnegan. And we have watched these charter schools grow now for just about a decade, giving parents choice, also being able to serve the needs of the communities in which they are located. The question is, how do these schools maintain themselves with additional pressures that other public schools don't have? For example, having to pay for their own facilities and their teachers. You heard John Thatcher talk about that just a little while ago. How is it that these schools will be able to continue in future and be what many consider to be Hawaii's best hope for education reform? We want to hear what you have to say. 941-3689. That's 941-FM89, the station you're listening to right now. This is Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. And if you want to call us from the neighbor islands, and we hope you will, our number is 1-877-941-3689. Going now to Paul, calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Paul, and welcome to Town Square.
Well, aloha, Beth, Ann, Lynn, Alvin, and John. This is Paul Veerle.
Aloha, Paul.
Aloha, Paul.
Aloha, folks. Beth Ann, I was blessed to have served on the State Board of Education up until December of 06, recently. And during that period, the last year, 06, I served as charter school chair. So this subject matter is very near and dear to my heart, as you might imagine. I had a couple of questions I wanted to ask your panelists today that contributes to the discussion about how to maybe gain some equity in our state system.
Well, I thank you for calling. Go ahead, Paul.
First of all, when the review panel was established by the legislature, the basic intent was to set up a group of people that would about 50% be advocates on behalf of charter schools and about 50% create increased accountability and make sure the ones that are out there are doing a good job and are sustainable. And since that time, one of the questions I'd ask your panelists to respond to is it's my understanding that the Board of Education member that's appointed actually has been advocating for issues related to decreased funding rather than stabilized where it's at or increased funding to create greater funding equity. That seems to smack of conflict of interest to me as a prior Board of Education member, and I would certainly be interested to get the feedback from your panelists on that question. Then a related question is right now, with the approval of two new charters last year, at the end of last year, and possibly another one coming up this year, that means there'll be 2 to 3 new charter schools and 300 to 500 new charter school students. And if we do not see increased funding, sustained or increased funding, where is the equity going to come from in terms of increasing the student charter school students, but yet not increasing the funding?
I think you just touched on a point that many people have been pointing to. How are they going to grow if there's not enough money for the ones that exist to be able to create some parity there? How do you have the whole movement grow? And that's partly why we're having the discussion. This is not the first time that I've heard that the BOE is thinking about putting or will put in a bill to further limit charter school allocations. So I want to talk to John and to Alvin and Lynn about this, too. Thanks very much for calling, Paul. Good questions all around.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a critical issue this year because the money that was put into the budget for charter schools for the additional students at the new schools was already cut out of the budget. So this legislative session, that's one of the priorities for charter school supporters in our community, is to really lobby for the restoration of that money. Otherwise, there's a limited pot, and the rest of the charter schools are going to have to take a smaller allocation because if these students are already, if it's the schools have been approved, the students are enrolled, then the limited pot is going to have to be split with more mouths to feed, and this could significantly affect the per-pupil allocation at all the charter schools in the state.
And so how do you answer when people say, well, you know, there are some who would like to see charter schools die a slow death, and here's proof of it?
See something.
Alvin, please go ahead.
The question that Paul presented is relative. The BOE member, actually there are a lot of things that the BOE and the budget proviso for the CSAO office agree upon. And in the joint committee for the budget proviso that was held yesterday, Tuesday, there was a lot of agreement. There are some areas of stress, if you will, that have to be worked out. But I'm quite encouraged by what I heard today in the discussion in Senator Sakamoto's office. That having been said, I think that the reason the two new startup schools were not given access to this year's budget is for that very reason that John is alluding to, that the two new startup schools are going to start 08-09 school year. And that gives us time to work on a revised budget.
And hopefully find some money to feed everyone, if you will.
That's correct. And that was under Attorney General Mark Bennett said that was possible for CSRP, the Charter School Review Panel, to delay the entry point of the new startup schools and of the conversion school. And so that's been very helpful, very insightful on his part, because there was a great deal of concern about exactly what John is talking about.
For those of you listening, if you've just joined us, we're talking about charter schools. Yes, the legislature has opened. Yes, charter schools are certainly on the radar of many. If you are a parent who has children or a child in a charter school, we'd like to hear from you and hear about your experiences. Do you feel that your child is absolutely getting the very best possible education in that charter school? And also, what do you see as real challenges as a parent? You're there on the ground. You see things maybe a little differently than some of those who are administrators. And we'd like to hear what you have to say, too. 941-3689, if you're calling us from Oahu. 941-3689. From the Neighbor Islands, toll-free, 1-877-941-3689. Charter schools, against many odds, are continuing to struggle to do well, but the issue, the overwhelming issue, is sustainability and finding funding that also incorporates what is needed for facilities, because right now charter schools have to pay for that part as well as their teachers on their own. Going to Larry, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha.
Hi, Beth Ann. Hey, I have a question related to No Child Left Behind, really. Maybe somebody could answer. Suppose that the school that your child goes to fails to meet the annual progress. So, you know, some people call this a failing school. But let's say you know, as a parent, you're thinking the school would be better off if it converted to a charter school. How do parents go about making that happen? That's my question. I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay, thank you. And Lynn, for some parents who are hearing this and maybe hearing it for the first time, realizing that maybe there is something that they could do that might help this school, what would you tell them?
Well, I think the first step in this is to find out what kind of interest there is and to begin the discussion with the principal at the school. And most certainly they could call Ho'okako'o and we can help explain to them what the process is like. With the schools that we've worked with, we've worked with both the principal, the faculty, and the parents as a partnership, because we feel that if a school is going to be successful in the long run, that it requires everyone working together. So for Ho'okako'o schools, that's very, very important. That is a signal to us about the potential for the school to be a successful conversion. There are federal monies available that a community organization could apply for to plan for conversion, to look at what, to do some research, to visit other conversion charter schools, and then to begin to look at the school to see if this might be a viable option through meetings in the community, through discussion and dialogue with the school principal. The school principal is key in this process for a conversion. If he or she is not interested, it would be very difficult then to move the conversion discussion forward. Not impossible, but it's truly a partnership.
John, what do you do in that situation if you have a school that is what some would term failing, something that Lynn was just describing, and you have parents who do want to go through a conversion similar to what happened with you? What do you do?
Well, I think it really starts from the parents getting involved with the school and really learning what's going on in the school, getting actively involved in the SCBM or the PTA or the community council or whatever. But when we started as a school within a school, and then when we converted to a charter school, we never could have done this if we did not have the active support of the parents. So I've been asked to speak to schools, to school community groups over here, to groups of parents and teachers at schools that are actually in that position. And, you know, my advice is to really get involved and really learn and speak your mind and try to find answers and try to organize, you know, opportunities to bring people in to talk about what's going on with charter schools. Because if you look at it in some ways, you know, a lot of the successes of charter schools is because the parents are so active. Because we have a local school board, which largely consists of parents, faculty, community members, if we do not satisfy our parents, then they're going to leave the school.
Which, of course, reduces how much you get per pupil.
That's the bottom line.
But the point is that if they leave the school, that's actually money that walks out of your school.
That's right.
So it's very much a consumerist perspective. Okay. For those of you listening, I want to hear from some parents out there. You've just heard John Thatcher talk about the importance of parents' involvement in charter schools. If you have your child in a charter school, we'd love to hear from you. 941-3689 is our number, 941-FM-89. And if you call us from the neighbor islands, 1-877-941-3689. Charter schools take a lot of time and effort to put together, but as you're hearing many of my guests this evening say, it's worth it, but that the big key component is parents, in a case of being able to empower parents to create a school or help co-create a school that works for all of its constituents, including parents, students, and the teachers, too. But it's not without a price, and that's part of what we're talking about this evening. How do these schools maintain themselves? How do they fund themselves? Because they get funding from the state, but that also means they have to pay for facilities, a very different situation from other public schools. Want to hear what you have to say? 941-3689-941-3689. We have callers on the line. If you get a busy signal, call us right back. We do want to hear from you, and we will get you on as quickly as we can. If you're calling us from the neighbor islands, it's toll-free, 1-877-941-3689. Support for Town Square comes from Hastings and Pleadwell, a communication company advancing the well-being of women through the support of organizations such as Afghan Hui, and from Hawaii International Child, a nonprofit adoption agency serving families since 1975. The next general information session is February 5th in Honolulu, HawaiiInternationalChild.org. And from Honolulu Waldorf School, providing education from early childhood through 12th grade, education making a difference since 1961. Information at 377-5471 or HonoluluWaldorfSchool.org. Going now to Sharon calling us from Kapolei. Aloha, Sharon, and thank you for your patience and welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you. My name's Sharon, like you said, and I am actually the parent of a charter school graduate. He's a class of 2007, from Myron B. Thompson Academy.
Sharon, we're having a little trouble hearing you.
Okay, hold on a minute. I'm on my cell phone in the car.
Okay, I think we might have just lost Sharon. All right. Sharon, if you can hear us, do call us back because we want to hear a little bit more about your experiences. In the meantime, going to Richard calling us from Honolulu. And if you would like to be next, our number is 941-3689. That's 941-FM-89. Or if you're calling us from the neighbor islands, it's toll-free at 1-877 and then the 941-3689. Aloha, Richard. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. My son is out of school now, but when he was in a charter school, it was actually mandatory for the parents to be involved in different parts of the school programs. And definitely the school basically would have failed if it hadn't been for the parents' participation as far as funding goes, because it definitely depended mainly on that for survival. And the parents were an integral part of the programs that were involved. They were part of the students and all the rest of that. So, yes, parent involvement is an integral part of charter school.
How long ago was your son in a charter school?
I would say, now, but it had to be probably about 10 years ago.
Was that here in Hawaii?
No, actually, it was on the mainland.
Okay, that's what I wasn't understanding.
Oddly enough, the head of the charter school was from Hawaii. She had started a charter school here in Hawaii and had moved from Hawaii to the mainland, where she started the charter school that my son was involved in.
But the bottom line is, for parents who want to be involved with the charter school, they really have to be involved, because so much depends upon them. It's not just you send your kid off and there you go. Or you, you show
absolutely.
Up and you sell chocolate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's mandatory. You have to be involved in the different programs where they go off-site to different learning experiences outside of the school, as well as the programs that go on.
But that sounds like chaperoning, though. Where, did you really have a big component to, part to play when it came to fundraising itself?
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was also another part of it. The parents had to participate in fundraising in the community, as far as getting companies and et cetera involved and raising money from them.
So you went off looking for corporate sponsorship.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Okay. Very interesting. Richard, thanks so much for the call.
You're most welcome. Okay. Bye-bye.
John, you've just heard what Richard had to say about his mainland experience. Is that something that you also ask of your parents at Connections?
Our parents are really actively involved in the school. And, in fact, from the time we started, some of the parents that used to volunteer are actually working for us now. In fact, several of the parents that used to just volunteer at the school are now a part of the school in different positions, from the health aide to teachers in the school. And so it's critical that the parents are involved and the parents have an understanding of what's going on in the school. Because, you know, as I said before, you know, the parents are the ones that can choose whether they want to stay in the school or not. And so for us, we open our doors to the parents. Parents come to me and they say, I'd like to go sit in my child's class because my child's having a problem. Do you think that's possible? I said, you can come whenever you want. Well, do I have to go get a pass and do this? Yeah, you can get a pass, but you can stay the whole day. I've had parents that come for a week, every day for a week, and it's a great part of the education. I talk to them about what's appropriate. I watch them, but the parents, just the fact that they are welcomed in the school with open arms, and we keep them busy. If they're here, they're going to be an active participant in the educational process.
Alvin, yes. The parents at your school, are they also this involved?
Not as much as what John is defining, but we do have a tremendous amount of involvement. As an example, our Ohana Reading Night historically attracts 200 to 300 parents, children and parents.
That's a lot of parents.
Well, we have 500, like I said earlier, we have 500 students and about 100 employees. Majority of the faculty are Kamehameha graduates and Waianae High School graduates. 90% have master's degrees. So it's an interesting mix because of the dynamics of the community of Waianae, the Waianae Coast. The school has been embraced by the community. Consequently, we have a waiting list of 382. We don't have enough facilities to put everybody on the campus.
You'd like to have another campus to put the kids on.
Well, actually, we need more. We built a PE facility that's been shipped in from Oregon and in collaboration with Kamehameha Schools, one-time funding program. But the school is a school of choice. We have provide a free bus service, as an example, from Makaha to Waianae to Nanak, Maile, and then to our school. And so one of the things I do in the mandatory meeting of parents at the beginning of the year is to explain to them that bus service is not an entitlement, it's a privilege, because it's a free bus service, and it's telling your children are telling you that they know what's going to be expected of them when they get on the bus, because they know where the bus is going to end up.
So, I mean, there's a great deal of, I dare use this word, accountability. I mean, it's been overused, but in this case, there seems to be a great deal of it, both for the children and for the parents and the school. John was making the point that if parents aren't happy, they're going to take their kids out.
That's
means less funding for that school, which means that parents can vote with their wallets as well as their feet.
That's correct.
Okay, so for parents listening out there, how good does this sound to you? And would you want to have your child in a charter school. We want to hear from you, too. 941-3689 is our number if you're calling us from Oahu. 941-3689. If you're calling us from the neighbor islands, it's toll-free. Same number, 941-3689, with 1-877 in front of it. Charter schools, some say the very best hope that Hawaii has for creating education reform. You've heard some of our guests talk about the choice, the aspect of choice, the involvement that parents have. A lot of parents feel that they want to be stakeholders in the school. Alvin Parker was mentioning that the school really has been, his school has been embraced by the community, functions as an integral part of it. All of this sounds very, very good. Certainly, a lot of people have to be responsible for making it happen. If you're a parent and not happy with your school, would you consider putting your child in a charter school? 941-3689. 941-FM-89, 1-877-941-3689. Going now to Sharon calling us from Kapolei.
Hello.
Hi there. Glad you're back.
Hi. Yes. I'm in the car. Sorry about that. But I heard the discussion.
Drive safely.
Anytime anyone has an opportunity, anytime I have an opportunity to say something great about charter schools, I don't want to miss it. I'm actually the mother of a charter school graduate. He's class of 2007, so he just graduated from Myron E. Thompson.
Sharon, I hate to tell you this. We're losing you so much, and we really would love to hear what you have to say. If there's any way you can get to a landline, we hope maybe you can call us back. All right. Thanks so much. And for those of you listening, if you would like to join the program, we want to hear from you, too, as we're discussing charter schools. 941-3689, 941-FM-89, or if you call us from the neighbor islands, toll free, 1-877-941-3689. I understand we're going to be joined now by Representative Lynn Finnegan. Aloha.
Yes, hello, aloha.
Hi there.
Bethan.
Hi there. You know, as we discussed charter schools, and yesterday we heard you say that Republicans are supporting charter schools. We've heard our guests this evening talk about the great choice and also the great responsibility that comes with all of that and needing to be able to have both the facilities as well as, you know, the raw dollars to be able to give the kind of education that most parents would like to see their children have.
Correct.
Where are we at this point? We have different numbers. John was mentioning that, you know, we have to look at maybe 8,000 per child this year.
Mm-hmm.
But when you compare that with maybe 10 or 12,000 for a child who's in a public school, which is not a charter school,
mm-hmm.
and Senator Sakamoto said, well, you need to drop out the cost for facilities. But doesn't that disadvantage a charter school?
Well, definitely it does disadvantage a charter school. But before I go talking into that, is John, Alvin, and Lynn still there?
They're all here.
Yes, we're here. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, everybody. Lynn. And, you know, one of the things that I just want to absolutely make clear is that those who are involved in charter schools right now, and especially from the beginning, they've had to go through so much to get to this point. I'm also a parent of two charter school kids, and when we first started, it was really hard to stick with the school because you feel almost like
you're in overwhelm.
I'm sorry?
That you're in overwhelm?
Well, not only overwhelmed, but you were like sacrificing. You felt like you were sacrificing your child's education in the beginning. Because to start up, sometimes, especially back then, was very, very difficult. And, you know, you would it would be so hard for the teachers and the principals. So those who've weathered the storm from the beginning and, you know, now it's a little bit easier. Or I should say, John and Alvin, it's a lot, and Lynn, a lot easier than it was before. I think it's getting better, I should say. And the part is we need to make it even better because what they do is they provide, many of these charter schools are providing quality education, and that's given what they have now. So imagine if you give them equal funding or facilities funding, you know, and these they go through challenges like finding facilities and changing sometimes in between, you know, right in the middle of the school year. That's unheard of. I think if that happened in the middle of a community, a neighborhood school, people would be so up in arms, and we would all be fired here at the legislature if that had happened. And here we are with charter schools, and, you know, some of them, like I said, they're changing locations. I don't know what the most it was in 1 year, but, like, maybe in a two-year period, you might have them change locations twice.
Or they have to go into extreme debt to be able to hang on to their location.
Correct. And so what you have here is you just have to be really super thankful for the quality of education that is happening within the amount of money that is, you know, that is given. Now, some charter schools, you know, are, and so when you look at that, to me, that's just amazing. And then you look at the fact, like, okay, what if they did have the facilities money? They need the facilities money, because if they did have that facilities money, they would even be that farther ahead and reaching probably all of the goals that they set forth in their own schools.
Can we talk a little bit about the charter school law?
Sure, sure.
Because, you know, some have said that it's just not strong enough. Others have said that it's actually, it's very strong, but you have to look at the various pieces of, or component parts that would make someone question its strength. But the Center for Education Reform continues to give Hawaii a D for its charter school law. Mm-hmm. And the counter, you know, question to that is, you know, is that because there is some sort of bias against unions, or that, you know, the whole issue of collective bargaining, all of that seems to, you know, drag us down from the way a mainland organization like the Center for Education Reform might be judging Hawaii's law? Is it unfair, in other words, that we're getting a D?
Unfair, I would say that, you know, there are a lot of things, like, in our package, including, like, you spoke of before, that basically across the board will give you a better grade towards how you treat charter schools. Like, for instance, not having a cap. You know, that automatically, I believe, puts us in the lower ranking, or doesn't give us, you know, give us the good standing. So those kinds of things, I think, automatically give us a low grade. I can honestly say, though, in the last few years, we've been making some strides. We still have a lot, you know, more to go. and for the health of these charter schools that have to still continue to struggle, we do need to do better. excuse me, I'm sorry, I still have a cold.
But, well, yeah, I join you in that one.
I think that there are definitely things that we could do better. And the way, I guess, I try to think positive. It's better than an F, you know. And
to give it some context, yeah, just so people can understand this, with 40 states that have a charter school law, and 20 of them, including Hawaii, which are in the ones that the Center for Education Reform deems weak, in other words, a C to an F, we have a D. We're kind of in the middle of that group. But, you know, half of those states are in that group with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and. Basically, I think charter schools are scary for states, because unfortunately, when you have, you know, something to compare to, when you start to see the bureaucracy start to loosen up, and teachers and principals being able to do things and parents, and, you know, being able to do things how they think they can do it best, then you start comparing it to the existing schools. And I think that that's what probably gets in the way the most.
Question for you, though, because some people have said, really, that the issue of charter schools and the choice is kind of just a very thin veneer for the issue of vouchers. What do you tell them?
I definitely think that vouchers and charter schools are very different. First of all, you know, I haven't studied too much about in regards to vouchers, but I believe you can go to just about any school. And, you know, this is still not giving up on the belief in public schools. And that's what charter schools are. They are publicly, you know, public schools, like your traditional schools, except for they have ownership at the local level or at the school.
And some say it's a hybrid that gives everyone the best of both worlds.
That's correct. That's correct. And, you know, and the thing that, about charter schools that I've seen in principals and teachers, because they're given more freedom, they're not afraid to try and have accountability. So there's that check and balance throughout the whole process.
Lynn Finnegan, thank you so much for taking time out and calling us.
No problem.
I'm delighted that you called.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Representative Lynn Finnegan, and we appreciate her calling into Town Square. Nice surprise. Going now to Paul, calling us back from Kailua. Paul, you wanted to answer that?
Hi, Beth Ann. Yes, in terms of the charter school law discussion, I had a revealing experience when I was on the Board of Education. I attended a workshop in the beginning of 06, a national workshop, or conference, rather, for charter schools. And the subject of the charter school law really strikes to the heart of governance. That's what the issue really is about, how schools are governed. And, of course, the primary distinction with a charter school and a traditional public school is that the charter school is governed by a local school board of parents and community members and staff. So that's fundamental to begin with. And the thing that I learned at this conference when we were in a workshop on governance, I asked an attorney that was leading the workshop, what's the most effective model you've seen nationwide for a charter school environment to function in? And his answer was, the most successful I've seen are the ones where they created a strong charter school law in the beginning. Then they created a good set of administrative rules. Then they created their policies, and then they created their guidelines. Hawaii did not do it that way. Hawaii created a charter school law. They do not have administrative rules to this date, which is a key ingredient. So that's something that should be addressed immediately by the Board of Education, which when I left at the end of 06, I asked the Board of Education to take the draft of admin rules that have been created and please continue to work on them and get them passed and in front of the governor for approval. They still have not acted on that.
All right, Paul, stop right there for a second because I want to get Lynn Fallon back into this conversation. Lynn, as you go through, you know, the conversion model and looking at how this changes the fundamental nature of how this school does business, does what Paul has to say here about having, you know, no real administrative rules in place first come into play?
It comes into play because there's lack of clarity. And that has to do with how decisions are made, whether or not certain laws apply or do not apply, and so forth. And so it would be very helpful to have a set of administrative rules. I do believe that the review panel may be looking at this along with the Charter School Administrative Office, and Alvin might be able to...
Well, I was just turning to Alvin as he was nodding and asking him to comment on this. Alvin, are they looking at administrative rules?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And Paul brings up a point. It's not the BOE's responsibility anymore. It actually is the Charter School Review Panel. So we've been tasked with that. And unfortunately, I'm the chairman of that panel, so...
Well, at least we have the horse's mouth right here. So,
you can look at it that way.
But what you're really saying is this is going to take some time, too.
It has not been done yet. It is not done yet. As my colleagues know, we've just authorized two new startup schools along with the conversion model that's with Lynn's group. It has been a work in progress. It has become quite a project because... As I was told today by Alan Awaya, you don't always want to ask for this, but now that you got it, you got to work with it. So we're really working hard, the review panel I'm referring to, and we believe that it will get done.
Do you have any timeline on this? Lynn, go ahead.
The administrative rules are critical, and taking the time to do them is essential. I think that the input process into the development of the rules and working with the conversion charter schools and the startups who have been on the ground trying to implement the law and their charters, and their participation will be very, very important. Because given the nature of this movement and how it started and where it's going, if the administrative rules are not developed in the right manner, we could end up with another bureaucracy, And so I think it's a delicate balance in when you develop the rules between learning from what has not worked and having the vision to put in place what we want for the future, building on the experiences and all we've learned through trying to implement the law. And so I really do credit Alvin and the panel for, you know, starting this process.
But Lynn, what would you like to see as part of the administrative rules? What would be absolutely essential, crucial for them not to forget?
I think as we were talking earlier about, you know, why do we have to have choices? And, you know, choices are about having people being able to select what works best for them and their children in the communities in which they live. And who knows better than those folks that are in direct contact with their children? I think there are certain core values that need to be built in the administrative rule along those lines.
Specifically, what? What core values would you see as being utterly essential?
I think the idea of choice. I think the idea of the role of parents. I think processes that have, you know, where people participate in a true, in a truly open process. And so that's going to require more outreach than just scheduling a meeting, circulating a draft, and, you know, that's it. I think the process has to be designed so that there is full participation.
All right. A question for all of you. We had a discussion a little earlier when Paul called the first time to talk about the issue of the DOE and looking at potential diminution of those allocations for charter schools. And, you know, some say, you know, to even do that when it doesn't even come out of a BOE budget or the DOE budget, rather, is kind of mean-spirited. The issue of power seems to come into this greatly as not wanting to relinquish it, because clearly all of you have said how important parents are. And some parents have said, well, the DOE doesn't want parents to be important. Charter schools say they are very important. Right there, you've got an inherent conflict. How are you going to continue to push us through? Yes, John, go ahead.
This is Paul again. Listen, you just hit to the crux of the matter for me personally. And that's why I called in about the governance and law issue, because I'm very encouraged to hear that the review panel now has the responsibility for the administrative rules. That means they'll probably move along, and like Lynn referenced, they'll move along in a very healthy fashion and format. My personal frustration was, having learned what I learned at that workshop, an attorney said that should have been the second step of the process, right, of the four-part process. Remember, the charter school law was put into effect in 99 or 2000. The Board of Education and the state legislature the Board of Education had about the last 7 years to create and get past those administrative rules, and they have failed to do so, and now they've recently punted to the newly formed review panel. That speaks to this whole issue of conflict of interest and, you know, why we're where we're at today with the process.
All right, Paul, thanks so much for calling in. I want to get John Thatcher to comment on this.
Thank you.
To me, it's very encouraging what Alvin is saying, because for 7 years, it was what Paul was saying. And I think they got so sick of hearing me say administrative rules. I think Alvin probably got sick of hearing me say it for all those years, too.
He's laughing, yes.
And, you know, to me, this was the crux of it, is that if you're going to have laws, you've got to have administrative rules to interpret the laws. Otherwise, it's ambiguity. And people are just shooting from nowhere. We don't know what's expected of us. And we got so frustrated that the Board of Education was unable or unwilling to create those administrative rules, that I think this was one of the reasons that people were calling for a group like the review panel to really take over a lot of the responsibilities for the charter schools. And so for the review panel to be working on administrative rules already in their first year of actually having the power is very encouraging to me. And it's, you know, this is something that gives me great hope that we are going to sustain this movement into the future.
All right. That seems to be a good closing remark from you. I want to hear from Lynn and also from Alvin, because it seems like, you know, that we have to keep the push to create a system that works if we are going to see this system sustain itself into the future. And clearly it has very different demands being placed on it and demands that it places on others for charter schools to be successful. And so they don't fail and die on the vine, despite the fact that everybody, you know, seems to feel that they are doing very well, given the limited amount of funds that they've had to do, you know, more with less, basically. So, Lynn, as we go forward this session, are you looking for some great boon or some great grace with charter schools, that this will be a year in which we see a real turn and great support for charter schools?
I'm very hopeful that this legislature will continue as it has in past sessions, and as Representative Finnegan pointed out, and Senator Sakamoto and Representative Takumi, that every session we've made progress. And so continuing along what we've experienced and the positive gains made, I think this session there will be very serious focus on funding for facilities for the startups. They are public schools, and they deserve and merit funding. I also think that they'll begin to look at some of the areas in the overall Department of Education budget to further find equity or comparability in funding that would support charter schools. So, yes, I am hopeful. I think we all need to be very vigilant during the process and not take anything for granted, because I think by our full participation, we'll be able to inform the legislature and advise them. And I think that the parents and the constituents of the different legislators will be key in this process.
Lynn Fallon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
And a final word from you, Alvin Parker. You're on the ground there. You are a principal. You are going through this. You have a huge waiting list and kids you would love to be able to serve, mm-hmm. but you can't because you don't have a plant big enough. You got a new PE facility being shipped in from Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
How hopeful are you that you're going to be able to see this movement expand so you can service all those kids?
I'm very encouraged by the fact that Senator Sakamoto and Representative Takumi, Representative Finnegan, and the governor's office are working collaboratively, and I have been around long enough to see the transition and the support grow. So as was said by Representative Finnegan, those of us that have been here from the beginning have seen a tremendous change in perspective at the legislature, and I'm very, very encouraged.
Alvin Parker, thank you so much for joining us. Alvin Parker, chairman of the Charter Schools Review Panel, also principal of a charter school in Waianae. Lynn Fallon also joined us. She is the executive director of Ho'okako'o Corporation, which is a nonprofit established in 2002 as the first implementing action of Act 2. And also many thanks to John Thatcher, who was here, currently the principal of Connections Public Charter School in Hilo. And thank you, all of you, for joining us, too. Charter schools will continue to keep our eyes on them as well, and we hope that you will continue to join us. Speaking of which, next week we're going to take a look at education, but very specialized education, sex education. Everybody wants to talk about sex, don't they still? Truthfully, Planned Parenthood says we still don't have standardized sex ed, and they want to do something about it. We'll hear what their plans are with this legislative session next week right here on Town Square. We hope you'll plan to join us Thursday at 5 o'clock. Meanwhile, have yourselves a very good week. Take good care. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Aloha.